if we think about our Kielce experience, we were looking at Indian ancestors, and sort of there were a number of talks around that. And then most recently, on Tuesday night, Paul Popsonim gave a very nice talk about the middle way, sort of, and kind of what that means. That inspired me to go back and really look at the what's called the Deer Park Sermon, which may be familiar to some of you. It's really, and Popsonim mentioned it in his talk, it's sort of the first teaching that the Buddha gave after he came out of his sort of enlightenment experience. And in the beginning, the Buddha probably said, you know, the sounds of the birds and the wind in the trees and all of that, that's probably enough. I don't know what else I'm going to say. And then he looked and he saw the suffering again, the very thing that had motivated him to set out on his path of discovery. And he said, okay, now I have some insight, and now I have to share that insight. So that's kind of the one of the founding values sort of in our charter, if you will. But I facilitate a group practice once a month with a group called Dharma Buddies in Seattle. And those are, it's primarily mostly older men who identify as gay, some probably 60s through their 80s, who do sort of some common sharing. And over and over again, the narratives that people bring forward are about suffering and how even with a degree of success and degree of kind of having some income and still even maybe being in fairly good health, this is still the primary color of their whole day is what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. So someone said to me, you know, the first noble truth, which the Buddha gave, said life is suffering, and that is not encouraging. What do we do? I said, well, at the SSDA, we investigate this. And the answer is actually in the second noble truth, as it's called, which is the causes of that suffering can be understood. And then just to review, the third noble truth, there's a path out of the suffering. And then the fourth noble truth, the path which you can live day to day your life with, is the Eightfold Path. I'm not going to unpack all of that because I think that's probably pretty clear for most folks here. And if it's not, you can ask. If you don't know what the noble truths are, talk to me or anybody. We'd love to tell you about them. But the Deer Park Sermon, and I hope I'm connecting the dots here for you all. The Deer Park Sermon, one of the first teachings the Buddha gave, was really around the different kinds of suffering we can experience. So it's not only that life is suffering or life is dukkha, which is the term we often use. If we begin to investigate it, we can see the different kinds of suffering that we may be experiencing. So this thing, not an example of intelligent design, as my mother used to say, as her body was falling apart from Parkinson's disease. I'm feeling it still holding together, but not as reliably as maybe I once did. I'm sure some folks here feel the same way. So there's the suffering of the body. There's the sickness that we can experience. Old age can bring suffering. It's a little bit in modern life, if we have access to good health care and medicine, that can be alleviated a little bit. If we do a thought experiment and go back a century or so or a millennium, when this body gets sick, seriously sick, that could be it. That could have been the end, you know. So very vivid, visceral experience of the suffering of the body and death as often the outcome of that suffering of the body. Here in modern life, we can extend that a little bit perhaps with surgery and therapies and medication, but we're still heading in that direction. So that's kind of the reality there. On the other side, particularly if you're a mom. I'm going to bring a new life into the world. Oh, wow. Am I going to suffer as I get ready to do that? Birth. And then the baby. Baby's not happy usually about appearing in the world. So right at the beginning of it is the birth. You know, the birth is also a source of suffering. All right, so we'll put the book in those, and then we say, so what else do we have? Buddha also talked about beyond those basic kinds of suffering, there are other eight kinds of suffering. He lists that you can use. So one of them is, and I'll just kind of randomly, a little bit randomly say, one of them is being separated from people or places that you love. So if you've experienced a child going off to college or on an adventure, if you're experiencing a friend going away for a long period of time, you may feel that. That may really color every day of your life in some way. That person may be there in your thoughts all that time. On the other hand, there might be somebody that you see on a pretty regular basis that you can't stand. Or there might be someone you live with that you're really having difficulty with, and yet day after day, oh, not again, the same argument, the same problem. So there's this being in close proximity to people that we have a problem with, or we despise, or maybe even hate. That's the word the Buddha used. Okay. Then, of course, we want things, and we might get them, and we say, yay! And then we lose them, and we say, boo! That constant sort of getting what you want and losing it, or not getting what you want. Then the other thing is, along with that, I might get something that I really don't want, you know. So back to the sickness, old age, death, it might be losing. I'd had a long conversation with a friend of mine earlier this week. He knows when those announcements come out, I think tomorrow or Tuesday, he's going to lose his job from Microsoft. I think that's coming. Our whole conversation was me trying to encourage him to get ready for that. He knows. So his whole life is invested in his professional identity, and now that's going to poof. So what do I do? Something that he really wanted, that he got, now he's losing it, and something else that he doesn't want. Beyond that, I can see something that troubles me. I can hear something that troubles me. Touch, pain. Anything that's happening through our senses or through our experience of life in our body or through what in the teaching we might call the aggregates or the skandhas, you know, this sort of form or the way we're feeling or our perceptions, what we see, what we do, that's also part of the classical Indian teaching. All of that is in flux and change. That can also be a source of suffering. So we've got some answers. Here are mine, or what I've had to do over the years. Drinking. Ecstasy. SSRIs. Prayer. Religious conversion. Wellness strategies. Qigong. Therapy, that's my current one. that all does something, I suppose. Some of them are more successful than others. I think probably if I look around the room and everybody maybe vibed with like at least a couple of those. does it work? Does it not work? Even if it works in the moment, the solution may not be long-lasting. It's not going to be permanent. It may help you today, this week, this month, this year, but again, things are going to change. So here at the SSDA, or I'm sorry, Blue Heron, what is happening is, and I think we're all doing this in different ways, we come in here and we sit down and we say, what is this? What's happening? What's going on in my thoughts? And Zhang Bonsonsa, he'd say, really, if you want one idea to latch onto, it's just to look at where your mind is leaning into desire, into aversion. And particularly, in my case, into self-reproach or a lack of kindness to yourself. Dang it. Why did I do that? Why don't I know better? Again, I made the same mistake. You know, there's this kind of beating up process that some of us can do when we really start to look at what's going on with our karma. But what am I feeling? What am I seeing? Who is the me that is feeling or seeing? Or who am I? What is this? So you, if you can begin to move from the self-centered sort of attachment to your experience of rah, 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 this, that person or that thing or that, you know, don't like that, I like this. If you can kind of let some of that start to go, that letting go is actually what I call the investigation. That's what I would call the forensics in the detective work, is just creating the space to let some of that go and see what else pops up, what appears. So that turns into what is this is curiosity. Oh, what? Or as one of my guys in the Dharma Buddies group said, yeah, I finally got it. It's like I sat there. It's like, what the hell is happening? You know, it's, okay, good. That's some energy there. Like you're facing that. You're finally really just letting yourself see what that is. Whatever, you know, whether you've been meditating a week or a month or a year or 5 years or your whole life, there's this, always this opportunity for kind of a sense of freshness or curiosity in this investigation. Then what happens, I think, in my own experience, and I hope for everybody that I talk to about this, is that we move into the third noble truth, which is we see the path out of that suffering. And Zhangji Sansa, I remember when I talked to her about that, she said, where's the path out of suffering? I'd say, it's up the stairs into the Dharma room. She said, okay, get going. so the path out of suffering is not some abstract thing. The path out of suffering is driving to, or gradually out of suffering could be driving to the Zen Center and walking up the stairs and sitting down here and doing that over and over. That could be your path. It may not be the only path you need. You might need the medication. You might need the therapy. You might need a good friend to hold you when you're crying or when you're, or something really unexpected has kicked you in the rear end. If you're a parent, I think you probably develop a pretty good instinctive sense of what someone needs in the moment with suffering, because you see it developmentally through all the stages of life with your children. If you don't have that option, you need to learn it in another way. So, but however you're doing it, like doing the investigation, doing the work, that's the path. That's the path. And that could take you through your whole life. And just to sort of riff one more thing to say is, if you do that work, you might suddenly see compassion starting to appear in places you didn't expect it. Empathy your intuition might become stronger just about what is appropriate in the moment, what's the correct action in the moment. You might just smile more. You might feel more at ease. I mean, it really just depends on what your karma is, where you are in your life, and what your issues are. But if you make a commitment to doing it, something is going to shift. Something is going to change. And I just have to tell you personally, that's like the coolest thing in the world. That's like the way I want to live, is just to have a wide enough view so that all the stuff I drag around just can start to put down. Zen Master Sung San's teaching was, put down your opinions, your condition, and your situation. I spent 15 years saying, well, what does that mean? I got to know what my opinions, condition, and situation are before I can put them down. So in this place, we're all investigating the clues and following the trail to see where it takes us. So that's the little bit of the comedian in my brain thinking about that. And I guess I would just say that I have a profound sense of gratitude that you all are here doing this, each in your own way. So, thank you.